We are in the middle of a sermon series that we are calling The Comeback. And The Comeback is built around the most famous story that Jesus ever told. He told a lot of good stories, but this is the most famous one he ever told. And this story is, by the way, I know when I say that, there's always the peculiar question, like, well, what are the other contenders for the most famous story that Jesus ever told? Well, we've seen a couple good ones, and we're going to see a few good ones in the next many months that we haven't gotten to yet. But I think this is probably his most famous story. And so we're building this series around that idea. And we started by seeing why he was telling the story in the first place. So we go back to the beginning of the chapter in Luke 15, beginning with verse 1, and it says this. It says that tax collectors and other notorious sinners often came to listen to Jesus teach. So here's what we have. We have a crowd of people coming. I got to pause my sermon here because my granddaughter just walked in the room, and I'm distracted. Oh, also my son and my daughter-in-law also walked in the room. Yes, that's great too. A little Aura Maze here. Life is good. Life is good. All right. Tax collectors, other notorious sinners, often came to listen to Jesus teach. These are crowds of people that wouldn't normally be expected in a religious gathering teaching about God. They were politically wrong, or they were morally wrong. They believed wrong, they behaved wrong, whatever. And so they often came to hear Jesus because they felt welcome. Verse 2 tells us that this made the Pharisees and the teachers of religious law complain that he was associating with such sinful people, even eating with them. They're upset by this because they're like, what are they doing in our gathering? Again, and what are you doing as a leader making them feel welcome? You're giving them the wrong signal. And they're upset. I don't know what's going on here. Last service we had a thing happen too. It was just a day of cell phones. You know, there used to be a policy at church that when a cell phone goes off, whose phone? I don't care. I'm not going to mad at you. I'll laugh at you, but I'm not mad at you. Whose phone is it? What are we hearing here? Is a cell phone on top of the ledge back here? Is that you, Zach? Or are you just helping out? We can put that on the back lobby table for now. Is that what we're doing? Okay. The old policy was if cell phone goes off in church while I'm speaking, our policy used to be that you owed me a pizza. Okay, so that's just, so feel free, if you want to have your phone go off in church. I like Aurelio's, pepperoni and green olive is my favorite, so anyhow, okay. Where were we? So the religious crowd is upset that who Jesus has in the room. They're mad that they're there, and that's why Jesus tells these stories that we saw the last couple weeks. Jesus told two quick stories. He told a story about a lost sheep and a lost coin. And he made a point that when he found what was lost, that the people who cared about him celebrated with him. That God's looking for celebrators, not cynics. And we made a statement that God cheers for the comeback. God cheers for the comeback. Now, then we started from those two stories. We saw the famous story that we're telling last week and today. And it's the story of what we call it's called the prodigal son historically. Although it's more than, well, anyhow, to review real quick, the story goes like this, just abbreviated version. A man who's wealthy has two sons. They're set to inherit all his wealth when he dies. But the younger son is a bit rebellious and doesn't want to be there. He feels home is a prison and dad is oppressive and he just wants to get out and live his life. And dad won't die so he can get his money and have the freedom to go on. So he basically tells dad one day, since you won't die, can we pretend that you're dead and just give me my inheritance now? That way I can go do my thing. And his dad could have just been upset, thrown him to the curb, but instead his dad decides to strategically to accommodate his son, and he does all the work of getting part of his assets liquidated and gives his son his portion of his inheritance. The rest would be going to his brother someday. And the younger son takes that money, and a few days later he's like, okay, good, I'm out of here, deuces, pops, and he's gone, because after all, that's all he wanted, just to get far, far, far away, where they don't have to see his family anymore. They can't see him and what he's doing. And he takes off to a far-off land. But of course, he's not ready to live. He doesn't know how to handle money. If he handled money well, he wouldn't have had his father liquidate his inheritance while it could have still grown many more years. But he don't think long-term. He thinks short-term. And he's got his money now, so he spends it now. Who cares about someday? We'll figure that out later. These are the good days, you know? So he spends and spends and spends until it's gone. And once it's gone, he finds himself desperate. A famine sweeps over the land. And as a recession sets in, he has no place to turn. He finally realizes he's starving. Everything he has been bartered away for food and for shelter. He finds a farmer who's willing to let him stay on his property if he'll feed his pigs. So he's in the property feeding pigs, and at some point he's so hungry he begins to wish he could eat the pig's food. The slop begins to look good to his hungry soul. But eventually, it occurs to him. It says he comes to his senses, and he remembers back home, the place that he was so hurried to get away from, where he was growing up in a rich family with all that he needed and servants that cared for their family's property and possessions, with an inheritance that would be his someday. And now he's far from home in a pigsty with nothing, and his inheritance is gone. And he comes back and says, man, this is, what am I doing? How did I end up here? And he decides to go back home because he remembers that his father, though he didn't give his father any credit back in the day, his father is such a good man that his servants have good compensation. They're cared for. They have food. They have shelter. And they have extra. He says, if I can just go back to my dad's place and get a job as one of his servants, I don't deserve to be treated like a son after what I did to him. If I can go back and be one of his servants, I can at least have a good future, better than this. So he decides to head home, hat in hand, And we see the story. We pick up the story last week. I'll review a few verses. Look at verse 20. It says, so he returned home to his father, and while he was still a long way off, his father saw him coming. Filled with love and compassion, he ran to his son, embraced him, and kissed him. His son said to him, Father, I have sinned against both heaven and you, and I am no longer worthy of being called your son. He's about to give his speech. He's in the middle of his speech to ask for a job. But dad interrupts him and says in verse 22, but his father said to the servants, quick, bring the finest robe in the house and put it on him. Get a ring for his finger and sandals for his feet and kill the calf that we have been fattening. Dad's hearing none of this talk that you're less than my son. You're my son, you're back. We're going to celebrate. You get the family clothes, you get the family ring, you get everything, you're back. Kill the fatted calf. Verse 23 says, we must celebrate with a feast, for this son of mine was dead and has now returned to life. He was lost, but now he is found. So the party began. And that's a very short overview of what we saw last week and the week before. And honestly, if you ever miss one and you want to catch them, the links to the video and the audio forms are on our website to find. But here's the thing. Last week we saw the message that Jesus was telling was to the prodigal child, to the prodigal human who wanders far and ends up in a bad spot. The message was simply this: come back home. Come back home. Your father really loves you. Come back home. It's the noise over there now, isn't it? I can't win today. It's been all day long. Okay. Well, that's the story that we saw last week, but here's the deal. And again, there's more to that than just that. But today, there's a rest of the story. Now, I'm going to tell you this right now. Last week's story, it was pretty epic. Last week's story was the most famous part of the story. This week's story is the rest of it. But if we're being real, this week's story is actually the reason Jesus told the story in the first place. The point of the story is what we're going to tell today. The last week was just the part that you can't put down. It's like, oh my goodness. But what happens today is why Jesus is even telling it in the first place. Ready? Let's jump on in. Verse 25 says, meanwhile, the older son was in the fields working. Remember, he had two sons. The one son stayed and took care of things, while the other son insulted his father, took his inheritance and ran off and spent it all. The older son is in the fields working. When he returned home, he heard music and dancing in the house, and he asked one of his servants what was going on. I find it a little interesting to me that he had no idea. He's been out doing what he does every day. He's been grinding in the field. He's been taking care of business. Right? I mean, this is what he was this responsible young man who his dad had gotten older. His dad had worked this thing all those years, and he's gotten to the point where the son has to take care of things. And he's out there in these years, and he's putting in the hours. And his brother comes home, and he never even knows about it. The party's already started. Like, you know, dad didn't wait for everyone to get there. He's like, let's start now, and we'll just keep the party going as friends and people arrive. Well, apparently that includes the older brother, because no one tells him. I mean, they didn't send out a servant to say, hey, go bring him out here. I want to talk to him. Hey, you should know something before anything else happens, son. Your younger brother's back. Yes, as you expect, he wasted all the money. We weren't surprised, but he's back. But here's the deal. He's sorry. He doesn't feel worthy to be part of our family anymore. But that's nonsense, right? We're glad he's back, and we decided to have a party for him. What do you think? He was never notified. He was never invited to the decision-making process. It was nothing. He just comes back and says, oh, something's going on. What's the occasion? He doesn't even know. He pulls out his iPhone and looks at his calendar app. Nothing's on the schedule. So he finally asks somebody, what's the deal in the house? And in verse 27, your brother is back, he was told. And your father has killed the fattened calf. And we are celebrating because of his safe return. Oh, that's what's up. Verse 28 says the older brother was angry. And he wouldn't go in. We're going to give the older brother a critical look today. Because we have to. Because that's the point of the story. We're going to give him a critical look because his attitude's wrong. But before we do, I think that we sometimes rush off into not appreciating the good side of the older brother. And that's a problem. Here's why. Because when we do that, we don't see the story for ourselves. Otherwise, what we do, if we're not careful, is here's what we do, and I say this often. When we read stories in the Bible, we do it with every movie we watch, every show, we always identify with the protagonist. Everybody else is the opponent to our hero. So Jesus is our guy. So if Jesus is for you, we're for you. If he's against you, we're against you. If you're against him, we're against you. You know, it's just like this is our team. And if we approach everything that way, then it's always me and mine are right, you and yours are wrong if you're against me. And we never learn. The truth is, in the story today, we can make the older brother this villain that we're about to see, when most of us ought to find ourselves in the older brother. Jesus is telling the story to a room full of people who were mixed, very religious people who came to hear more about God and usually to critique how he taught about God because they would do it differently. But also he had people in the room who were tax collectors and other disreputable sinners. And they're showing up, which is what the religious folks are complaining about. And Jesus is like, listen, I need you to see yourself in the story. We need to see ourselves in the story. So let's, before we dump on this kid, let's just appreciate the older brother's emotions. He's upset because that Yahoo who made a damage to their family's back, and there's a party going on. I didn't even know. I was even invited to the planning process. I just come home and, oh, there's a party. I guess I'm one of those, he'll get here eventually, we suppose, people to my brother's return party. He's upset. And before we dump on him too hard, I want to say a couple things about that. But first, let me say this, and this is maybe a sidebar, but it's intentional. We've taught this often. We need a whole Sunday for it, probably. But it goes like this. It's easier to care for the broken than the breaking, right? It's just easier. Churches everywhere are full of Christians in churches, house churches, small group, is it within churches, are good at welcoming people to come their way who have a story of brokenness, because many of us do. And people come with a broken story, we're like, oh, we love you, we're glad you're here. And if they have a story about being somewhere broken before and they didn't find compassion there, it seems, according to their story, we're like, oh, well, we're better than that. Because it's easy to care for the broken, but it's harder to care for the breaking. Because you see the pain, you get frustrated, you react angrily, or you might react trying to do the right thing and get it wrong accidentally. Or you might get it right and they just think you got it wrong, but either way, you become someone's story. The problem with looking down on other people's, the story about other places that broken people come to you from is you're hearing one side of a story. And all of us have been someone's story at some point. We've all gotten it wrong. I'm sure every one of us has left somebody feeling like we did less than a stellar job in helping them through their tough times, whether that's legitimate or not, because we're human. And sometimes moments are hard to know what to do with Humpty Dumpty. But ultimately, it's just easier to care for the broken than the breaking. It doesn't make us better. It can make us compassionate because we care for the broken. The question is, how do we do it? And one of the lessons from that is don't judge others for how they handle hard situations, because we don't know how we would do in that story. But also, when we see people making a bad turn in front of us, love them. Don't wait to say, I would have had it not been personal. I love you now. And why do I make that whole point? I make that point because that's what the older brother's doing here. We read the story 2,000 years later, and we're like, oh, nice story. Younger brother messed up. We don't like what the younger son did when he insulted dad, took off, and wasted his inheritance. We read that story, and we say, oh. But, you know, by the time we read four verses later, he's back home. You know, we've had two sips of coffee between the time he left and got back home. We're like, okay, moving on. You know the problem? The older brother didn't just read a story. That was his family. He watched it break. It's harder to care for the broken. It's easier to care for the broken than the breaking. He was there when he watched the older son insult his dad, break his dad's heart. His dad find a way to give him his inheritance early and get that money and put it in his hands. He watched him walk down the road and not care, like he was the king of the world and we were the idiots. He watched his brother disappear. He watched his dad day after day stress, like, did I fail as a parent? Am I a failure? He watched his dad constantly hope against hope that someone would come back. He watched him diminish. He was there to carry on the work, to plow the fields when dad got older. And then all of a sudden, this kid comes back and he's like, hey, I'm having a party for him. And I'm not saying his attitude's right because it's not, but let's not be glib because I think that many of us would have the same reaction if we weren't careful. Let's keep reading. The older brother was angry and would not go in. His father came out and begged him. But he replied, all these years, I've slaved for you and never once refused to do a single thing you told me to. Yet, in all that time, you never even gave me one young goat for a feast with my friends. Yet when this son of yours comes back after squandering your money on prostitution, celebrate by killing the fattened calf. Again, we're about to critique what he just said. We're going to go back and read that again because there's a lot to learn from that. There's a lot of wrong in what he's saying. Here's the thing, though. It's understandable. He's like, I've been the one carrying on when dad was getting older and maybe even depressed by what happened and doubting himself. I've been the one dealing with the aftermath of putting everything back in motion once my brother left. I've been faithful. I've been loyal. I've been here. I've been doing the work when dad couldn't do it anymore, that it would be nice to have two brothers doing this work, but I guess it's all on me now, and I've been doing it. And then he just shows up and everything's wonderful. Like, if he's more excited about him being back than me being here, he's frustrated, and that's understandable. And we have to relate to that, or we're going to miss the lesson because this becomes a problem with the older son. Where would we be? Where was Jesus' audience who was complaining a minute ago about who else was in the room in this story? Where are we in the story as we complain about culture and things around us today? So let's look at those verses again, and let's look at them through the lens of, there's some tells, and I'm just going to say this to you, there's some tells that this older son, this older brother, is unhealthy internally. Externally, he looks great. Internally, he's not healthy. And we're going to see the tells in what he has to say. Are you ready to read it again? Verse 28, the older brother was angry and would not go in. His father came out and begged him. There's the first problem right here. You see, in the older brother's story, he's thinking about himself. I've been here. I've been faithful. I've been true. I've been working. I've been doing the right things. And that brother has been terrible. And between me and him, but no one's thinking about the father. You know who's no one's considering? The father's emotions, the father's feelings. You see, for the father in the story, this was one of the greatest days of his whole life. Because his lost son was back. You know, when that younger son walked away, that was one of the worst moments of this man's life, this father's life, wasn't it? When his younger son went away, it's like, oh. Again, did I fail? Is it my fault? Is there regret? I'm worried for him. Maybe I've taken damage to my own reputation by what's happened and what I've done to accommodate it and where he's gone and I'm an enabler. Was I a bad father? Is he okay? Where's he at? The father took such a hit. It was one of the worst days of his life. And hope against hope that it would ever turn around. And when that boy showed back up, remember the father did? He scooped up his garments in his arms. He ran down the road to hug him and meet him because he's so glad he's back. Because he don't care about his dignity. He cares about his son's home. So here he is in one of the happiest days of his life. He's celebrating. All that pressure, all those years of fretting are gone, and he's happy. He's like, where's my other son? Oh, he's outside. Well, come on, tell him to come in. He's mad. What? Well, tell him to come in. He won't come in. He's mad. And I think that at that moment, the father had to have a knot form back in his stomach all of a sudden, right? He's just gotten over the knot in his stomach that's been caused by his older brother, younger son being away. And that's finally resolved itself, and now he's got a knot in his stomach because of his older son. You ever had that happen to you where you've been anxiety because of something going on in your life, and as soon as that lets up, something else, like whammo. In the moment of this joy, he's like, oh no. And he bristles and he goes outside. He leaves the party that he's been dying to have for his younger son. He leaves the party to go out. Say, what's wrong, son? I'm mad. Please come in. Your brother's back. I'm not going in. And he's begging him. And here in the happiest day of his life, no one's thinking about the father in this moment. But that's what happens when we get stuck in ourselves. Is it, even my goodness is about me. Everybody thinks it's about me. And he's lost. We'll see that more. Look what he says to his father in verse 29. But he replied, all these years I've slaved for you. Now hold on, we're going to stop right there. All these years I've slaved for you? That's a strong statement, isn't it? Like you were a slave? I thought you were the kid who inherited everything that father has one day. It's all yours. Woo! You slaved. That's a perspective. It's not a good perspective. Even the younger son who walked away and insulted dad on his way out the door, when he hit rock bottom in that pig pen, even he was able to admit, my father takes good care of his servants, let alone his sons. Takes good care of his servants. But this older son right now is like, I've been slaving for you. It's just emotions talking. It's just hyperbole. You know what we call it, don't you? It's a victim mentality. The older son is stuck into a victim mentality. Now, I'm going to take a quick side note to say this. I have a friend that many of you met before named Keith Cowling, who came here to our church back at the beginning of the year and spent a couple of weeks on Sunday teaching and then during the small group during the week for a few weeks. Keith is a business coach and a life coach. He's got all over the country and actually internationally. He's so booked out with people he's helping and companies he's helping. And he's going to come back twice more, I think, this year before the year's up, one in the near future and one another time to give us some more things. But one of the things he teaches that I'm hoping to ask him to teach here one day is what they teach is called the drama triangle. And there's three points to the drama triangle, and there's a right side of how to come out of it. But one of the points of the drama triangle is victim mindset. And every victim always has what we call a persecutor. The persecutor could be a real persecutor, or it could be someone that we decide we make them our persecutor. That's what happens when we get in that space. And this boy has found himself in a victim mindset. I'm slaving for you. Let me ask you a question, everybody. If he's in a victim mindset, then who is the older brother's persecutor in the story here? His dad. Not his brother, because he don't care about his brother. My dad, I've been here slaving away. And here's the problem. Here's the problem with victim mindset, by the way. When we get into that space, we always end up becoming the persecutor ourselves, don't we? Now he's bashing his dad. Now he's ripping his dad apart. You. He's all these years, I've slaved for you and never once refused to do a single thing you told me to. Now, I'm going to be clear here. Beware of the superlatives. Superlatives. Said it right. English teacher. Actually. Beware of the superlatives. Okay, but watch out for them. You know what superlatives are, right? You always do this. You never do that. I always do this. I never do that. Yes. All those words, right. Best, most, yes. I've never once refused to do a single thing you told me to, Dad. Well, actually, he's refusing to do something his dad told him to do right now. Come in the house. But that's the first time. Right. But anyhow, you remember the best. If I've ever messed up, it's understandable. If I ever refuse to do what you said, it's because it was unreasonable. You know what I'm saying? I comply with all the things I agree with. So I'm a very compliant person. I do everything I agree with. Isn't that what compliance is? I never once refused to do a single thing you told me to. And then he says, and in all that time, you never gave me even one young goat for a feast with my friends. Again, superlatives, whatever. You never gave me even one. Now, has his dad never given him that exact kind of feast? Maybe not. But has his dad never appreciated him all those years? I doubt it. But here's what happens if we're not careful. We get so focused on ourselves and what we're doing, us against everything else, I'm the good guy, that if we're not careful, I'm good. If I've ever been bad, it's justifiable so that doesn't count. I've been good. You've been bad to me. If you've ever been good to me, I'm overlooking that because you've been bad to me, but there's no excuse. It's a certain lens I see things through. And the son is in a spot outside with his poor father who's trying to celebrate his other son's return. And he's telling his dad, I've always been the perfect son and you've been terrible. Never appreciate me while I slave away for you. And then he says this in the next verse. Yet when this son of yours, notice not my brother, yet when my brother comes home, no, this son of yours, always remember that one, your son. Yet when this son of yours comes back after squandering your money on prostitutes, you celebrate by killing the fattened calf. He is mad. I don't have a brother anymore. He's dead to me, but your son, yeah, Dad, you're responsible for that mess. Look what he did with all your stuff. Look how you're handling it. Making a fool of you. You're doing it again, Dad. You're blowing it again. Once again. And all of a sudden, the son who was the good one is the one on the outs. All of a sudden, the one who was always on the inside. You ever ask yourself, how do the ones on the inside end up on the outside? This story, when we started it, was about two sons. One irresponsible son said, give me my stuff now, ran off and did, and he's the prodigal, he's the lost one. And the other son was the good one who stayed home and did all the right stuff. But now, late in the story, that wild child is back, he's home. And the older son is outside the house refusing to come back in. How does that happen? How is it that those ones on the inside end up on the outside? Is it pride? Resentment? Yes to both? Is it the mindset that says, I've always been the one to hold things all together, right? I was thinking about a story I read years and years ago. I can't remember all the details, but it was impactful when I read it. It's about a family situation where a father and a mother lost one of their children, not to death, but they were gone and they were young. And it just devastated their family. And in that particular case, it could go either way, but this is a story I read about how the mother just fell apart. She just like lost it. She just couldn't cope. The father just held things together. He was a rock. He was a bedrock of that family. For years, people were like, oh, that poor family, and that boy, that mom, she's really struggling, God bless her. But man, he's been such a steady person. And then something happens, and I don't remember the whole story, but the family gets brought back together. And the mom recovers amazingly. She just recovers. She finds her stride because things worked out years later. And then the father just kind of lost it. He's upset to see her. All the times he's had to hold it together and then everything's fine as usual and it just annoyed him and he got upset with it and he became petty and he just kind of fell apart. And he's like, whoa, what was it? Was he always unhealthy but masking his unhealth and doing the right things? I think so. I think the older son in the story, he's been doing the right things and we're like, oh, he's the good kid and the other kid's bad. But somehow all the story has shifted and now the older son, something is coming out that was maybe always there. How do the ones on the inside get on the outside? And it teaches a lesson to all of us that goes like this, that you may not know how lost you are until the lost come back. See, the story today, we look at the story, it's famously called the prodigal son. That's what it's known for. People have played with that title and called other things, but the prodigal son is the famous tale. We hear the story, we think prodigal means reckless. We think of the story of the wayward son that comes home, the lost son. Can we be real today? It's not a story of a lost son. It's a story of two lost sons. They were just lost in different ways. One was lost to irresponsibility, one was lost in responsibility. One was lost to wild living, one was lost to planning. One was lost to recklessness, one was lost in religion. Just different kinds of lost. Because neither of them had a heart for their father. They had a heart for their father's stuff. The one wanted it right now to go enjoy. The other one was willing to wait the long game to get it, but neither one really cared about the father. When push came to shove, they both were cruel to their father. They were just lost in different ways. They both found themselves outside the home. They both found their father leaving the property in hopes to get him back in. It's different. Isn't that interesting? What's interesting is that the one was lost because he had a high time preference, as we mentioned last week. Wants it now. Get it now. Spend it now. Enjoy it now. These are the best years. The other one's like, I'm smarter than that. I can have deferred gratification and catch up someday. And to be honest, though they were lost in different ways, can we all agree that the older son was lost the smarter way as far as business goes? I mean, yeah, he has an inheritance still. Much more palatable way to do it. But the story still earths out that though he made a wiser choice for his future than the younger son did, who lost it all, they both didn't care about the father. They both cared about what they could get from him. They just handled it a different way in their temperaments. But they came back. The one came back, and the other one is now outside. The good one is now the one outside, refusing to come in the house. Look what his father says to him. By the way, before I go there, I'm going to say this to you. That statement on the screen, it challenged me as a young man. I've been doing this for a long time. Nothing challenges us faster than when we see people come. I'll tell you what reveals the heart of many of us who try to follow the path and do the thing that we think is honorable. We get self-righteous more than we think we are. And one of the best ways it fleshes out is how we respond to people that we disagree with or think are wrong and when they receive grace. Whether it's grace from God or grace from a church or a leader or organization. Not those people. That's when it comes out ugly sometimes. I've seen people, like in Jesus' story, mad at who's in the room, mad that Jesus lets them in the room, mad that Jesus eats with them. I've seen in modern day culture, religious people who've lived good, holy lives in so many ways, furious and attacking other churches or ministries because of their response to certain groups of people that they don't think you should be kind to. And I'm like, why are you mad? Your lostness is coming out in your response to how people respond to people you think are lost. You may never know how lost you are until the lost come back. I was a young man. We were married, Michelle and I were married. We were in Bible seminary. We did all the right things that we were raised to do. All the right things. And I have a story to tell that I'm not going to tell for A, sake of time. There's enough story today. And B, this is too personal and embarrassing to tell very often. But something happened where someone who was given away had received some grace, and we were plotting away, doing the right thing, and there's a whole focus on that. And I remember getting mad and doing the same thing, being like, we've been doing the right thing, we've been faithful, we've been doing the... I vented and got upset over somebody else who was in a moment of grace, unappreciated, made a fool of myself. No one said it at the time, just the shocked reaction. But it was a moment where my pharisaicalness popped out, and I'm 3 decades or more older now, and it still haunts me. Because it exposed something in my heart that I didn't know was there. That you can be lost in your goodness as much as you can be lost in your badness and miss the heart of the Father. You may not know how lost you are until the lost come back. The older brother's outside the house. His father makes one last appeal in verse 31. His father said to him, look, dear son. Notice he says, dear son. It's so important to see those words. He's not mad at his older son. His father was good to both of his sons. He ran on the road making a fool of himself to embrace his younger son returning. He goes out of the house talking kindly to his angry older son when he needed it. The father loves them both. See, it's easy for us to think that God loves us more than the other kinds of people. In Jesus' crowd, in the story began, the religious people thought, we belong here, those tax collectors and other notorious sinners don't. God loves us more. It'd be easier for some of us to flip that around and say, God hates that religious, pious arrogance. He hates those people, loves us. But the Father says, I love both. God loves everyone. Sent his son for everyone. He loves the wayward prodigal who's squandering it now, and he loves the responsible religious one who's self-righteous and arrogant and uncaring for people that they don't appreciate their mess. The father just loves his kids. He's sitting there saying to the son who is outside, dear son, look, you have always stayed by me. You've been true. You've been faithful here. And everything I have is yours. What he's saying is this, the younger son, There's no inheritance left for him. He's back. We're glad he's back, but he spent his money. When the Bible says, everything I have is yours, he means it. The rest of what I didn't give to him belongs to you one day. Let's not forget that for the younger son, there's an uphill battle to come here. He's home. He's not a servant. He's not lower than. He's a son, but he's a son without an inheritance left. He spent it. Now, I'm sure his father's going to give him a good opportunity to get ahead. He's giving his servants a good wage, and they're getting extra. He's going to say, son, we're going to give you a leg. We're going to figure it out together. We're going to work hard together. But this is a young man who has not had that mindset his whole life. He's got to change his personality. Is he going to come home and suddenly become a hard worker and a saver and a future person? Or is he going to have to learn to do some things that are different? Probably so. But the older son has the whole inheritance coming that's left. And the father says, son, you're mad that your brother's back when you've done everything right and everything belongs to you. Why are you mad at his party? Like, he has so much regret and so much hurt, he needs our help right now to move forward from that past and to have a great future. And you could be a part of that with me, but you're mad that he gets a party? You've been with me. Don't lose me now. And what his father is saying is, hey, listen, you didn't get the party, but you didn't get the scars. Like, would you really want to trade places with him? Would you really want to go back and say, hey, yeah, you know, I have a party, but I didn't get, my inheritance is gone. You have everything. Why are you mad and begrudging him for having a moment of celebration that is well-deserved? Because he's home. When I was young, teenager, and even a young adult, a married adult, we go sometimes to religious gatherings where someone would give testimonies. Have you ever been to a place where they're giving testimonies? Let's get a testimony. Anybody got a testimony time here? Okay, you've been to those? And people are going to stand up and tell their story and get on stage and tell their story. And there were some stories that are just, wow. Life of drug abuse, alcohol addiction, prison, all sorts of things. And when the stories are being told, some of us would sit there with our eyes wide open. You couldn't fall asleep for the life of you. You're like, whoa. This is a movie here. Story of tragedy and terrible heartache. And then they tell how at their lowest moment, the gospel reached them and they came back and found the gospel. Some of us, that's your story for some of us in this room. And I remember hearing those stories. That was boring. But you hear those stories, you're like, wow. By the time they're done telling their story of how they came back to the gospel and found the Lord, everyone's crying and clapping. And I'm like, that's awesome. And my next thought is always this. I don't want to go next. I do not want to tell my story after that story. Because mine is lame-o. Well, here's me. I was kind of raised in religious upbringing and not perfect. No one is, but my sins are kind of boring comparatively. I mean, sorry, they don't sound boring. They're not boring. They're wrong. They're a mess of the rebellion. But it's just not interesting. No one's going to be, it's not impressive. I've kind of followed the path best I could, and I made my mistakes. I made my struggles, but I've largely, man, nothing to I wish I was addicted to crack. Nothing here. I got nothing here. And it's so... The story, the father's like, son, yeah, your brother's back, but look what he's been through. And you're mad at the party? Because you didn't get a party? You also didn't get any of that. This is a good day. This is what we want. Here's what he's saying. Verse 32, the father says, we had to celebrate this happy day. We had to. The only right thing for us to do is to celebrate what's happening right now. Because that's what God does. We saw the other stories, the lost sheep, the lost coin. We celebrate when the lost get found. We had to celebrate this happy day. Why? For your brother, not this son of yours. No, your brother. Your brother was dead and has come back to life. He was lost, but now he is found. We are doing the thing that any person with the right heart would do. Welcoming him back, celebrating his return, helping him figure out how we all go forward from here. And what the father was saying to his older son was simply this, come back in. You know what's crazy about the story? What's crazy about the story is that it ends with no resolution. I want you to think about that for a moment. The story ends with no resolution. The story starts with the younger son running away. How terrible of him. But he comes home. The older son staying outside angry, won't come in. And the story ends with him outside. Jesus could have said, and then the next verse, the older son says, you're right, pops, let's go in and throw a party. does, it just leaves us hanging. What's he going to do? Where do we go from here? We don't know. I think Jesus did that on purpose because his audience was full of people who were upset and complaining about who else kept showing up to the Jesus gatherings who didn't belong there. And Jesus is like, hey, you might be like the older brother. You think you're the ones who are on the inside, but you're ending up, you're driving yourself outside because you don't see how lost you are towards the people that God cares about like he cares about you too. And he's saying, I'm not putting you down. You're just lost a different way. I want you to come back in. But he leaves it unresolved because I think for many of us, it's angry. It's a harder lesson to challenge religious people. It's a harder challenge when we feel self-righteous to be told maybe we're not right. Part of my whole posture is I'm right and they're not. I'm right and you're not. And when we get challenged, it's easy to get. And Jesus is saying to the ones who were right, come back in. You're on the outside because you're missing my heart. You're lost a different way, but I don't want you to be. Come back in. Your Father really loves you. The gospel message is this. We're all lost. We're lost in different ways. Some of us, it manifests itself in one way that others are like, oh. And others manifest in other ways that people are like, ugh. Sometimes people like the older brother are very much a turnoff, and people who are like the younger brother are so tragic, right? We're all lost in different ways. That's the point of the story, isn't it? Everyone gets a little bit lost sometimes, even if it looks different from each other. But here's the gospel. There's one constant. It's the Father. The Father consistently loves his children no matter how they get lost. And he wants them to come back home. He wants them to come back in. And so today, wherever you find yourself in your journey, come back home. Come back in. Your Father really loves you.